spiritually, what I wanted to communicate through that album was about how traditional music is contemporary music and can be contemporary music, and that we must think of ourselves on a continuum, and that the more we can think of ourselves as a continuum, not just musically, but in many ways, the more that we can understand that we must face the past and dream the future and to build the future.
You're listening to The Rhythm of Rebellion with Taina Asili. Welcome to another episode of The Rhythm of Rebellion. I'm your host, Taina Asili, and today we have the immense privilege of engaging with a true musical luminary. Mekli is an Ethio-American vocalist, songwriter, and composer known for her electric stage presence and her ability to craft deeply personal Ethio-jazz songs that resonate with audiences across the globe. Mekli's music is a journey that has taken her from the heart of Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to stages in San Francisco, New York City, Nairobi, Cairo, Montreal, London, Rome, and many more. Her latest album, When the People Move, the Music Moves Too, has not only been named among the best records of the year by Bandcamp and the Sunday Times UK, but has also ascended to the top of iTunes, NACC, and European World Charts. Additionally, Mekli is a National Geographic Explorer, a TED Senior Fellow, and a former artist in residence at Harvard University. She has been commissioned to create new work by Lincoln Center, MAP Fund, the Center for Cultural Innovation, and Mini Center for the Performing Arts, among others. She's also been involved in impactful projects like the Nile Project, which addresses cultural and environmental challenges in the Nile Basin through music, education, and enterprise. Mekli is also the co-founder, host, and co-producer of Movement, a new podcast and live show that explores global migration through music. There's also a personal note I wanted to add. I first heard Mekli in a TEDx presentation I watched online, and I was so inspired by her unique approach to sound that I began incorporating Mekli's listening technique into my own songwriting. I've been a fan of Mekli ever since and had the pleasure of finally meeting her in person several years ago. Today, we explore Mekli's art, her journey, and her commitment to music that moves the soul. Hi, Mekli. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me. I am good. I'm grounding and grounded, and I am happy to be here with you.
I'm so happy to have you here. I have been a fan of your work for a long time.
Thank you.
I mentioned at the top of the show that I was so inspired by a TEDx talk that you did on the way that you capture sound. And it inspired me so much that I incorporated that method into a song on my last album that I put out called Cucubano. After listening to the sound of the dripping water from a plant that I had watered and hearing the rhythm. And just that invitation to do that deep listening and to hear the music that surrounds us. And I just want to finally have the opportunity to fully thank you for offering that to us, because it was so important, particularly for me as a musician, to be able to do that deep listening.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to hear that story. You know, it was funny when I wrote that TED Talk. It was actually very special for me. And the way that I did it was that I wrote three versions of a TED talk that just did not work, like, at all. And then I would, like, talk to the TED Fellows team, and they would be like, well, you know, give me feedback. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to string together insights that have been important to me musically and see what happens. And then that thing just emerged. And so I felt like, I was like, oh, wait, this is what I do when I write songs. Like, why not do it when I write a talk? And so it really was not about, like, I have a thesis that I want to share. It was like, what are these, you know, places and, like, touchstones that have moved me creatively about how the world is musically alive on its own? And then that's how the talk came about. And I think that's, like, that kind of emergence is, like, part of what makes that talk resonant. And then I also had a lot of fun connecting Saint Yared an innovator of Ethiopian pentatonic scales who lived 1500 years ago with John Cage. I was like, you know what? These things, like, it doesn't like to have a through line between them, that like the experimental and the traditional could live in one narrative in a really natural way. I was like, you know, that felt good. And then the last thing I'll say about it is that when I gave the talk, it was at a TED Fellows retreat, and I was super, super, super nervous. I was like really, really nervous at the first like minute. And then as soon as I spoke Saint Yared's name, a calm came over me. There's like this line in the talk, his name was Yared. And it was like, oh, then it was like, I was like, oh, wait, I'm even getting the chills talking about it. Because it was such an ancestral connection, you know, being able to share the work of this very, very important ancient musical innovator who was so spiritual, who like created, you know, so many manuscripts that are still the foundation of many Ethiopian pentatonic musics today. And like, as soon as I said his name, just the calm came over me, and the rest of the talk was like being in my living room. And so I think there's all that stuff, like where it was like, it was a really deep offering for me. And I hope that's part of what made it resonate with people.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other piece of that gift that I received was being able to discover your music that you write and doing a deep dive into that. And just getting to listen to that has been such a gift. You know, your music is often described as Ethio-jazz and deeply personal storytelling. I was wondering if you could share how your cultural and musical roots and your personal experiences have influenced your unique style and the social impact you aim to achieve through your work.
Yes. For me, you know, I always wanted to be a musician. I just didn't know how when I was growing up, you know. I saw like an academic path that people were taking where no one seemed to be having any fun. And then I saw like a cult of fame path where people really just wanted to be famous. And that wasn't me either. And then when I moved to San Francisco and like got immersed in this world of arts and culture of like really people who were thinking about the ways that their music could resonate with the communities around them, could be relevant to the world, could engage in like deep social issues. I was like, that's how I can do it. I get it. I understand. And then from that point, every step that I took towards music, music would take 10 steps towards me. And like a real moment of evolution was in 2011. I took my band to Ethiopia for the first time. And we performed our very first show there. And sitting in the front row in this like three-piece suit was Mulatu Astatke, the godfather of Ethiopian jazz. And I was like, what's he doing here? What's he doing here? What's he doing here? How'd he get here? How'd he get here? How'd he get here? What's he doing here? Why is, you know, I was just like, I was so nervous. And before that, I had learned that whether it's the godfather of Ethiopian jazz or it's like only the people in the room who organize the show, or it's a packed house, like everybody gets the same show. They get a show that's like, you know, you expressing your spirit. So anyway, after the show, he took me aside, Mulatu Astatke, the godfather of Ethiopian jazz, he took me aside and he said, you know, Ethiopian jazz, we have a long way to go. Like we, like culture, basically he was telling me like culture is not stuck in amber. He's like, Ethiopian jazz, he said, what's your contribution to Ethio jazz? Why, you find that contribution and keep innovating. Don't be afraid to keep innovating. What's your mark on it? He said, for me, I took the pentatonic scales and I merged them with the diatonic scales. And he was like, that was what I did. What are you gonna do? And I was like, and then I thought about that conversation for 3 years and I thought, okay. And then it took, being on tour with the Nile Project, being on tour with like this group of incredible traditional musicians, traditional Ethiopian musicians. And I saw that, okay, what I'm really drawn to is rhythmic. And I was like, I'm going to bring Ethiopian rhythms into Ethio jazz. And I'm going to just start there. That's just because Mulatu Astatke, he was really working with like Western rhythms and Brazilian rhythms and even Cuban rhythms. He's a conguero. He was a conguero. I said, that's going to be my starting place. And then I wrote the album, When the People Move, the Music Moves Too. I wrote like 60 songs and chose 11. And And so, like, I like to think of myself as, like, rooted in tradition and innovation, and that's like what that's what traditional music is. Like, as our mutual friend Alsara says, like, traditional music is just the pop music of the past, you know? And so and so, like, I have a deep love for the power of Ethiopian traditional music, and I like to call it the infinity in five notes, pentatonic scales. And I just, like, for me, that, like, the rhythms and the scales are just a starting place. And I've been so grateful and blessed that, like, my biggest audience is actually in Ethiopia. Like, wait, I didn't go. It works. You know, so that I didn't know it would. I didn't know if it would. So that's kind of my musical path. And then creatively, just in terms of the kind of projects and initiatives that I work with, it's just understanding that music is a place both to, like, you know, be in it for the long haul, because our hearts need nourishment along struggle for justice and peace that is ongoing. Yes. And also that we can tell bigger stories together than we can on our own. And so I like to bring artists together to tell the biggest stories we can collectively, whether that was with the Nile Project at the intersection of culture and ecology in the Nile Basin, or with Movement, which I've been currently working on, uplifting the songs and stories of immigrant musicians, or more, you know, because it's also like a daily practice. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the way that you talk about this exploration of this music that, you know, it's like a river ever flowing. You know, where are you guiding the river? And I know for myself, as a Puerto Ricana, who came from two family members, my mother was a dancer and my father was a Latin jazz conductor and a
cordero
and a singer. And, you know, that history influenced the work that I create today.
Yes.
But the work that I create today isn't what existed before, right? So I'm constantly thinking about what is my unique voice. And there are many different cultural influences that tell the story through my music, through my voice. But I too love to kind of get rooted in those cultural rhythms as sort of my starting place. They're sort of the backbone that then I kind of build from. Mm-hmm. So I appreciated that. You mentioned the album When the People Move, the Music Moves Too. And that album has received critical acclaim. And I wanted to hear more about the inspirations behind it. What messages or emotions did you hope to convey?
Well, there's so many layers of it. What I feel drawn to say in this moment was that album was amongst many things of it's funny, in the trajectory of songwriting, my first songs, like when I started writing songs when I was 25, and I wrote my first song at 25, and then I didn't write another song for like 8 months, you know? And so I was kind of late to the game of songwriting. And I even had a muse, which is funny. Uh-huh. I had a muse. They are real. I didn't understand what they were until I met this person. And I would just get around this person and the songs would just flow out of me. They would like just jump out of me. And I would like speak poetry. I was like, oh, I have to write that down. And it took me 10 years to develop a methodology that could write songs as good as those early songs that just kind of flowed. And the 10 years was the When the People Move album. And I think that also it was my kind of birth as an arranger, which I had not been an arranger before. And I had not had the confidence to do that because I didn't have formal music training. Right. But this was like the place where I gave myself permission to be like, okay, I'm going to write the horn lines. I'm going to write the bass lines.
Yes.
I'm going to set the rhythms. I'm going to. And it didn't mean that I did absolutely everything. Like, of course it was collaborative. And like, you could give a rhythm and then somebody be like, oh, well, what about this? Or we could make it to this. And I'd be like, no, yes. You know, like, because I was very, I was. Yes. But so that album in many ways was like, it was me maturing musically. spiritually, what I wanted to communicate through that album was a lot what I was saying before, which was about how traditional music is contemporary music and can be contemporary music, and that we must think of ourselves on a continuum. Yes. And that the more we can think of ourselves as a continuum, not just musically, but in many ways, the more that we can understand that we must face the past and dream the future and to build the future. And both of those things are true at the same time. So it was an action that I was taking musically, but it was a message and a spirit that was bigger than that. And then, you know, like, there's one song on the album called Yesterday's a Tzitzita, which was really about, like, bringing the idea of a tzitzita, which is this, like, beloved song form in Ethiopia, into a contemporary context. And there is a song called Yerak Aira Sal, where I was playing kirar. I learned to play kirar, the traditional six-string harp, in this process. And Yerak Aira Sal translates as it grows further, it is forgotten. And it was about how we must bring the things that we care for again and again and again. We must remember again and again and again what the things that we care for, whether it's the values that we care for, the structures that we want to support and nourish. Like, we can't do something once and let it go. Like, the ongoing commitment that it takes to build a world that we feel that we actually want to live in and want to see and that has justice and peace.
Mekli, you've mentioned a few times spirituality and music, and you shared this piece around the songwriting process and the album creation. What does that look like when you step on the stage and when you're sharing the music live?
So I think that there are the things that you can put into words and the things that you can't. But I think that, you know, like, for example, when I sing a traditional song like Kemakum, the I Like Your Afro song, which is a song from northern Ethiopia that I sing and that I interpret in, there's one level that it's like, okay, and I like to bring traditional songs, just as I like to write my own songs. But when I sing the traditional music, the spiritual part for me is like, I feel like these traditional songs have been loved by millions of people, that they have made their way into the mouths and the hearts and the hearths of millions of people, and that all of those people who have loved that music have put something of themselves into it, and that stays in the song as it goes. And so when you sing it, you feel like this current of power that you're riding, and it's this, and it's all of the people who have loved and contributed to that song, contributed lyrics, contributed the way the melody bends, and you can literally feel that continuum on the stage. And then there's a part of it where it's like, my job on a stage is to get as free as I can and as close to my inner voice as I can. So when I'm on stage, I listen to that voice and I don't question it. And the best shows are like that. So it's like, okay, and these little messages will come to you. It'll be like, stand up on that table, you know, you know, down on your knees, you know,
yes,
open your arms, you know, get big, you know, and then now quiet. And it's just these, and I'm putting words to them, but they're not, it doesn't come verbally. It's like a,
yes.
So my job is to be as free as possible, so that others can feel freedom. Because, you know, when you go to shows, like, I find myself, if I'm like at a dance show, like I'm almost mirroring the people on the stage, like in my seat. It's those mirror neurons firing, you know? Yes. And it's so we're just encouraging each other to feel as free. And it's like becomes a circle of freedom. And then it's also like, okay, when you are free, then what happens? Then that inner voice is very clear. Very clear.
Right.
And you just, you're super listening to it. And then the last thing I'll say about it is that sometimes there are times when you feel like, I'll just say that I did this show at UNC Chapel Hill, where like all those places, like all these buildings were built by enslaved people. mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I was singing a song called Ethio Blue, which is a title track for a record I have coming out in March. And that song is all about like the people who created this music and the calloused hands that played instruments when they were done with the soil for the day, you know, and the, like the deep places, the roots, and also connecting Ethio jazz and American jazz as Black diaspora musics, you know. And let me tell you, singing that song in that place built by enslaved people, it was like an electric experience of like, let's just say it felt like the spirits were enjoying themselves to that song. Yes. You know, so there's also this other thing that happens that we're not really, you know, it's a different kind, like it's a continuum that we may or may not always be aware of, but that music touches across space and time is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ooh, there's so much in there I want to dive into. Well, first, there's something about what you said at the top of this interview about the listening piece, you know, and responding. So yes, about getting free. But I know, at least for myself, part of being able to hear the messages is that I'm listening.
That's true, too. You know? Yes, yes.
And sometimes, you know, it can be difficult, right? When we're on stage, especially if we're sort of like a band leader role, you know, we're paying attention to what all the different instrumentalists are doing, you know, what's happening in the audience, is the sound right? You know, there's a lot of distractions that can happen on a stage. And so I've created these different tools that I use to clear those away.
What tools do you use?
Ooh. Well, you know, one of the things I always start off with is once I kind of get things situated, you know, I often start a set with my eyes closed and I start with some sort of evocation, usually a song that starts off where it's very vocal driven and improvisation driven. I'm calling in my ancestors. I am connecting with the voice and really allowing it to be free. And I just let it roll. Sometimes I'll hold a note. This is my, for as long as it takes to feel it, to be in it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's like a starting place. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's, if I get off track again, I come to that place of closing my eyes and just recentering in the heart, you know, recentering in the spirit. Do you have a tool? Do you have something you use?
I mean, you know, there's a few different tools, but one of them is when you start to ask yourself, how's it going? Are they liking it? How's this going? You just be like, oh, there, hello, voice of like, I don't know if it's like, it's kind of a voice of insecurity, you know, just to really just name it. It's like, when you're not uncertainty, anxiety, insecurity comes up. And I just try to say hello to that voice. Hello, that voice. I see you here. Yeah. You're not helpful to me right now. You know, we can talk later. Just put it on a shelf. But like acknowledge it. You know, you recognize it and be like, okay, now is not your time. And then the other thing that started helping me a lot was when I started doing outdoor shows, like a lot of outdoor shows, because in the beginning I was doing a lot of, I would only do like indoor shows. And when you're playing indoors, the sound bounces back to you, you know, it hits the back wall and it comes back a little bit, but so does the energy. And the energy comes back to you. And then you start to play outside. And when you play outside, the energy just keeps going. It just keeps going. And you just, it can make you feel really alone up there. And so playing outside is what helped me realize that I don't have to, of course it feels better when it comes back to you, but you don't have to actually wait for the feeling to return to you for you yourself to feel it. And so playing outside helped me get to a place where first I would be like, okay, well, right now I'm not performing for the audience. I'm performing for my band. Like, safe mm-hmm. place, the band. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I realized, like, no, actually, I'm doing this for me. And mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. and then when you realize you're doing it for me, and then you ask those questions less of, like, how's it going? Is it working? Is it, oh, what? Oh, I made a mistake. Oh, no. You know, that kind of stuff mm-hmm. kind of just quiets down when you're doing it for you, because it's like, well, what are you doing when it's just you in a room? You know, and it's not to ignore the circle of the audience, because that's incredibly important, but it's just to say that, like, the wellspring, you stay to the wellspring, like, stay with the wellspring, and, like, everything else yeah. is going to be okay.
Yes. I love doing outdoor performances too. I love when I have the opportunity to sing to the sky.
That's exactly right. Like, you know, it's a whole other thing.
Yes. And sometimes I might even be near a river mm-hmm. and singing to the river or singing to the tops of the trees. It shifts the energy for sure. I also wanted to circle back to what you mentioned about Chapel Hill, because I performed at Chapel Hill last
really?
Year. Yes, I did. I did a residency
so
there.
So you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And the show was organized by a family member. Mm. And all of my family came out. These are all, you know, Afro-Boricuas, Puerto Ricans coming into the space. And it shifted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was intense. And by the end, I sang a song called Aguanile by Hector Lavoe. And it's a very spiritual song. And I'm like moving through the room and I'm just feeling it. You know, I've just felt the ancestors coming through me. So I 100% know what you're talking about and appreciate you sharing that. I wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about some of the work that you're doing outside of music.
Yes, of course. So
we know you are a National Geographic Explorer, TED Senior Fellow, co-founder of the Nile Project, an advocate for social change through the arts. And today you also have this podcast, this live show, Movement, which delves into global migration through music. I wanted to see if you could talk a little bit more about your work outside of music.
Yes.
What inspires it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always been an organizer. Like when I was a kid, it would come out in these ways that were more informal. Like my friends would call me and be like, over the summers and be like in high school and be like, okay, what are we doing today? And I would like make plan. I'd be like, oh, okay, we're doing this. Today we're doing that. You know, next week we're going to do this. And I would just organize my friends to have all these experiences, you know. And then I was also organizing, like, I would organize like 50 high school students to like build a house with Habitat for Humanity. Like this is back in the day, you know, and like we would like do these like marches. And I just like to organize. I like bringing people together. And creatively, it has been a real strength for me, both musically and outside of music, because like the power of bringing people together is exponential, especially for a common purpose. And so like when I started writing songs, it was the exact same time that I became the co-director of the Red Poppy Art House in San Francisco's Mission District. And we were like doing family art for children in the neighborhood. We were collaboratively working with other artists to do installations against gentrification and against police violence in the neighborhood. And that was at the very same time that I was writing songs. And I was collaboratively creating an international concert and performance series there. And this is a tiny 650 square foot space, like tiny, tiny, tiny. But it was like, well, what do we have and what can we do with it? And we could do a lot with just very, very little. And then what I found out was I was meeting so many artists through this organizing process and co-organizing the Mission Arts and Performance Project, where we would take over like garages and backyards and living rooms and make them into arts and performance spaces that were entirely free for the neighborhood. And through all this, I met so many musicians. And then I was like, well, I just started writing songs. Do you maybe want to be in my band with me? Like, could we maybe do a song? Could we maybe do like a couple songs together the next month? And I just like, so I was meeting all these incredible, like, evolved artists, like deep in their practice. And they were like, yeah, sure. Let's like, we were doing all this stuff together. And so organizing was about community building, and immediately started supporting my songwriting too. But for me, like, telling bigger stories than we can tell alone is incredibly, incredibly important. And that's why I co-founded the Nile Project, which brought together musicians from the 11 countries of the Nile Basin to learn from each other, to co-write songs together, co-arrange, and then really look at and model the kind of cross-cultural communication we wanted to see around the resource sharing in the river basin, which includes Ethiopia and Egypt. Okay, I'm just going to say the countries because people don't know. Congo, DRC, Congo, Rwanda, Burundi, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Eritrea, South Sudan, Sudan, and Egypt. And so we were all working together. And then also putting African people in a leadership position around a specific question, which is like, okay, how well do you know the people who with whom you share an ecology? And how does that knowing them or not knowing them impact the way resources are shared or the ways that we can be manipulated around resource sharing in our ecologies, wherever those ecologies are? And we were putting African peoples, African musicians, in particular African women musicians, in leadership positions around facilitating and exploring those ecological conversations across North America, across Europe, and across the Nile Basin itself. We really felt, and outside of that specific project, continue to feel like arts and culture are essential, not extra. They are essential. They are deeply, deeply important to not just creating connection to other people, emotional connection to issues that resonate across time, but also where the people who are most impacted by oppressions, by particular social justice issues, can be the ones in leadership positions around defining the dialogues, the narratives that impact the policy, whether it's around ecology, migration, or other aspects.
Yes, to bringing people together through music. What does that look like today with your podcast, with Movement?
We uplift the songs and stories of immigrant, migrant, and refugee musicians. And I co-founded this project because, like, I came to the U.S. as a refugee. And, you know, it took me a long time. Like, at first, when I was young, I really, that identity did not resonate with me. And then it became something that I, you know, wore proudly and could reclaim proudly, you know. But just knowing that there are generations of people, you know, using music to harmonize the places that we are from with the places that we call home now, and that's cross-genre music. It's not one genre. It's like electronic and hip-hop, it's traditional music, it's jazz, it's everything you can imagine. And also that we need new narratives of migration. We need new ways to think about it, to talk about it, that come from the people who have experienced it. And at the same time, we're a music discovery show. Like, it's like, if you want to learn about incredible music happening right now, like, actually immigrant communities are an incredible place where that kind of musical innovation is happening. So we're like part social justice project, part music discovery platform. We're a podcast, we're a live performance series, and we're also a community building organization. We're just starting bringing immigrant musicians together, gathering, building solidarity across communities, specifically working in the Bay Area around that, which is the place that I call home today.
I see so many reflections of the work that you're doing with Movement in connection to this podcast.
Yes.
And one of my intentions, beyond sharing this craft of creating music that makes change in our world with listeners, is also to receive for myself. You know, I'm taking notes. I'm like, okay, what's Meklit doing? You know, what she got going on? Is there anything that you have received from your guests that you have woven into the work that you do today?
I mean, I receive so much from the guests on the podcast. And I think what I'll say for the first season is that it's, well, first of all, the interviews are super intense, right? Because people are just like sharing their hearts. But what I'll say is that what I've really received is, you know, this idea that, you know, what we have been gifted from our ancestors is not just trauma and pain, but it's power, gifts, and like a fierce creativity that is urgently necessary. And mm-hmm. I'll also say what I've received is these stories of healing, because so many of the folks on our podcast, whether it's Chom Nimol, the Cambodian lead singer of Dengue Fever, Clarissa Bitar, gorgeous Palestinian virtuoso oud player, Sancha Ranchera, queer ranchera singer from Los Angeles, is that folks are, you know, working with music, using music to connect to their ancestors and also to be a way of fully being themselves in a place where being ourself can be, you know, can be targeted. And it's a way of building community around that, building safety, support, and also building a space for that music to have momentum in the world for their own communities and beyond to understand the exponential power that is within the music that they're bringing. So it's a lot. It's definitely a lot. And then it's just dope music, you know. It's also just that. Or yes. Not just, but it's also that.
Oh my goodness. What a gift. Megli, your commitment to social impact through the arts is truly inspiring. And I was wondering what advice you would give to other artists who aspire to use their creative talents to make a positive difference in our world.
The first thing I would say is like, understand that in the world of like, once you get into social justice and social change, like people want to know, well, what's your impact? You know, and this can be very deflating and demoralizing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're talking about an effect that you have on another people or a group of people, that can be difficult to measure. So what I would say is like, sometimes if you're going for a grant, you have to do something to measure it. But also understand that we actually can almost never really truly understand our impact. Like, and it's only sometimes that we get windows into it. And what I'm trying to say is like, don't be discouraged by that impact question. Like, wrestle with it, experiment with it, but also like understand when it comes to affecting someone else's heart, like, sometimes we're lucky enough to hear from a person like, hey, your music kept me going in a time when I was facing something very difficult and dark. And like, that is like, for me, those kinds of impacts are just as important as like the things that we can measure on a graph or a chart. So just understand that impact is something very wide and broad, and we can't ignore it, but we also can't lose sight of the intangibleness of music and the ways that when it comes to the way that our hearts are buoyed and our spirits are buoyed by working with it, that that's just as important and like might come to you through a story years later. So look out for it, listen for it.
Yeah.
But just don't get discouraged by those impact conversations.
Wow. Well, I'm going to share a story with
Please.
You. I started off by sharing that your TED Talk inspired me to create that song, Cucubano. And it just occurred to me that I didn't share that song, in addition to being on the album that I wrote for myself, I also put it on a compilation album called Borderless Lullabies.
Curated by Morally,
yay! Right? And that album was created to support an organization called KIND, Kids in Need of Defense. It's a legal defense fund for children in need on the border. And so I I'm just thinking about this gift that you gave me and how it continues to ripple out into the world, creating positive change. So I know that there are probably many, many, many more stories that both you and I will receive, and maybe we won't, you know, and that's okay too.
So thank you so much for that example. Like that really warms my heart.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being on the show. It's been such a gift to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I look forward to our listeners getting to explore your music more if they don't know about your magic already. And I send you so much positive love for the continuation of the work that you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this inspiring conversation with McLee. Her artistry, activism, and unwavering commitment to making the world a better place through music are truly remarkable. If you want to stay connected with McLee, you can find her at mcleetmusic.com and at mcleetmusic on Instagram. And you can listen to her podcast, Movement, on all podcast streaming platforms. I'm Taina Seely, your host. You can keep up with my work on Instagram and YouTube at Taina Seely, on Facebook at Taina Seely Music, or on my website, tainaseely.com. All of these links will be shared in the show notes. Many thanks to our editor, Moses Nagel, and Sina Basila Hickey at Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave your thoughts about the podcast. Your feedback is invaluable and helps us to continue to bring you these thought-provoking conversations. Until next time, peace, love, and liberation.